incredibly fast-paced program today, and we've covered about 500 different topics. So it's been a fun show. It's been a great Monday program, and when it comes to a variety of topics and the pace of the show, I think it's a typical, usual Mike McFeely show on KFGO. So let's keep things going on this afternoon at 4:36 and bring in our usual Monday guest who knows a little something about everything and a lot about a few things. His name is Clay Jenkinson. He is the director of the Dakota Institute, a published author, a former Rhodes Scholar. Are you a former Rhodes Scholar or a Rhodes Scholar? Once a Rhodes Scholar, are you always a Rhodes Scholar, Clay?
No, it's not like the Marines, Mike. Once you're done, you're done.
No, you're done. So you're a former Rhodes Scholar and you're done. Also writes a column for the Sunday Bismarck Tribune. Hello, Clay Jenkinson. How are you?
Good day to you, my friend.
So your column on Sunday was all about winter turning to spring. And we had a conversation with Greg Gust of the National Weather Service earlier today, and he said, absolutely, at some point we're going to have spring here. I actually like this time of the year, Clay. You?
I love it. I love the return of the light. You know, there's that day, do you have this happen to you, Mike, where you wake up in the morning and you realize, I have to have a haircut today. You know, it's like, where does that come from? It's just like, one day you're fine, and the next day you think, nope, today I cannot go on unless I get a haircut. Does that happen to you?
No, especially with my hair. That never happens to me. But what?
And then there's spring. I mean, it's like one day you wake up and there's light, and you realize, wow, the light returned. And of course, it's been returning incrementally. But at some point, it trips something in your brain.
Yeah,
it does. The light returned.
Yeah, no, and I agree with that. When it comes to hair, I'm very sensitive about my hair because I don't have much, and it's very ugly the way it is. But when it comes to, you got lots of compliments on your hair when I posted your picture on Facebook, by the way. Wow,
you know,
guys.
I cut my hair because I got also some people saying, what the heck is wrong with your hair?
Oh, I think it was glorious that day. I think your hair was glorious.
I need to actually grow it out for you.
But you're right about the light, is that you do wake up one day and go, wait a second, I'm waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I can see the an orange glow in the eastern sky. And then in my case, I'm done with my radio show at 5, and I'll usually stick around here till 5:30 or do whatever I have to do. Then as I head home, it's still light out, and it's still light out till 6:30 now in Fargo Moorhead. And so it's obvious to me now, and you're right, the flip has been switched, or the switch has been flipped, whatever the case might be, that it's we're getting towards spring here. It's kind of
a
cool feeling.
There's just one better moment in the year, and that is the moment in May when you are out on your deck or outside, and it's about 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night, and you think, oh my goodness, it's light forever. There's that moment. It happens in the same way. Some switch is tripped, and you realize, wow, this is why we live here, because that northern late night in June or May or even into July is one of the great experiences of life. You can't get in California. You can't get it in Mexico City. It's really a northern phenomenon.
My wife teases me a lot because I am very tuned in to the light and how long days are. And my mood improves significantly at this time of the year. I'm normally kind of a crabby curmudgeon, not a very nice guy to be around. But I'm really that way in December and January. But at this time of the year, I'm actually in a pretty good mood most of the time because it's lighter. And even, I mean, if it wasn't, you know, 5 degrees out or 5 below right now, with the sun the way it is in the sky, it starts to melt things. I mean, there's very little ice left in the streets. My driveway is pretty much ice-free, even though I haven't touched it for 3 months. It's fantastic.
Well, here's the funny thing about this. My snow in my yard is disappearing, but it's not melting. It's evaporating.
It's evaporating, yes.
I love that.
Yes.
And it's where it's like no ice at the end of the day. So here's what I'm waiting for, two things. One is the first meadowlark. When I first hear the meadowlark in the spring, it just buckles my knees, and I feel like life in the Great Plains is absolutely what it's supposed to be. I always wait, and then for the first thunderstorm. The first thunderstorm, it can come as early as April, but it usually comes at the end of May.
I used to wait for the first robin of the spring, but now robins are hanging around Fargo Moorhead year-round. I see robins in January along the side of the road picking gravel or doing whatever they're doing.
Global warming.
And so it's all this global warming thing. Exactly. You're exactly right. So robins used to be a harbinger of spring. Now it's... Now
did you say harbinger?
Is that the correct word? Harbinger?
Yeah,
harbinger?
It's wonderful. I mean, you said that you were a grumpy and sort of grim him sort of person, which I, by the way, I take to be the job description of a talk show host on radio. But you're not really. You're actually quite a happy person. I do think we all suffer a little bit from seasonal affective disorder. I used to laugh at that, but I don't so much anymore. But a talk show host anywhere in America who says the word harbinger or harbinger is my hero.
Wow. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
I didn't know you did three syllables.
Well, I try to avoid them as much as possible because I usually can't pronunciate them. I pronounce them. I usually can't pronounce them correctly. And
speaking of which, I was at the George W. Bush Presidential Library near Dallas the other day on the campus of SMU. And there is I'm not a gigantic George W. Bush fan, but
fancy that.
It's actually a beautiful presidential library, and there's a film in it about the humor and the daily life at the White House in the Bush years, and it's hilarious. And he, whatever else you say about George W. Bush, he had a self-depreciating sense of humor, and he makes fun of his incapacity to pronounce hard words and the way he butchers the English language, and it's actually quite funny. And I came away, as I suppose you should from a presidential library, thinking better of him than I did when I went in.
Well, I would hope you wouldn't think worse of him after going to his library that they set up to make him look good. Right?
And yet, at the same time, at no point in the hundreds of millions of dollars that they spent there, literally, does he say, not everything that I thought was going to happen, happened. There were no weapons of mass destruction, and I do feel that that's an issue. And the war in Iraq did not liberate the people of Iraq and spread democracy in the Middle East. And that's something I need to take responsibility for. I wanted some level of his maturity in saying, presidents don't always accomplish what they want to, from George Washington to Abraham Lincoln to George W. Bush. And I wanted some reflection, and there isn't any. It's just, I was a good guy and I made good choices, and if things didn't work out well, I'm done now. I'm back in my ranch.
But weapons of mass destruction and spreading freedom to Iraq, those were marketing slogans, Clay. I'm not sure that the president or anybody else who had true knowledge of what was going on ever believed any of that.
I think that George W. Bush was Dick Cheney's, I was going to say a bad word, Dick Cheney's ideal president, because George W. Bush was a great patriot who loved this country, who believed in democracy, who believed sort of America's mission in the world, and he actually was a true believer, whereas someone like Dick Cheney, I think, is the farthest thing from a true believer. He's a Machiavell who just wants to manipulate the world for American corporate interests. But he found the ideal front man in George W. Bush, someone who actually believed the stuff that came out of his mouth.
He found the ideal fall guy, the ideal dupe, the ideal puppet.
I don't see it quite that cynically, but I think we pretend we're a republic, Mike. Jefferson's nation of separation of powers and checks and balances and so on. When we're not, we're actually an empire. And the people who really control America, we never meet. They're behind the scenes. There are cabals of gigantic, wealthy, corporate, right-wing internationalists who manipulate our government. And they put into power someone like George W. Bush to make the rest of us feel like we're still a republic. And George W. Bush is naive enough, and I think decent enough, to actually believe this stuff.
So wait a second. I'm going to back up 3 minutes here. You called me cynical for calling George W. Bush a dupe, and you just went on for 2 minutes with some conspiracy theory about corporate interests running. Not that I disagree with it, by the way, but you just went on for 2 minutes about how a corporate cabal of internationalists select our presidents to pretend we're still a republic. So who's the cynic in this conversation?
Well, friend? I do admit that I have a deep, really deep disillusionment with the Jeffersonian rhetoric we throw out again and again, followed by a deeply Hamiltonian or worse national behavior. Look at Barack Obama. He came in saying that he was going to save the world. This is going to be a new era, bipartisan, nonpartisan, beyond partisan, that we were going to turn America around and going to solve the problems of global climate change and heal the world. And the minute he got in office, he met these people and they said, here's what we're really going to do, honey. I mean, I think that's, don't you
God,
think that's
God,
true?
That's a depressing thought. Yeah, no, I do to a certain extent. I think there was an idealism that went with Obama, whether it was from himself or his campaign or all the millions of people who voted for him, that after 8 years of George W. Bush, I think that people wanted an idealist as a candidate and believed the rhetoric that Obama and his campaign team put out there, which they probably cynically used to get him elected, by the way. It's depressing, and it's just depressing to think about. Clay,
he defends the NSA. He keeps Guantanamo open. He's had more drone strikes than all of his predecessors combined. He violates international boundaries at will when he thinks American interests are at stake. He bailed out Wall Street. He bailed out Detroit. I mean, this is not a leftist. The right loves to see him as some sort of a wacko leftist statist.
He's
socialist.
A socialist statist communist, Clay.
He is a
from Kenya.
He is a better front man than George W. Bush for this, I said cabal, and I suppose that's the wrong term, this group, this set of interests that really runs the world. And, you know, he has had to back away from almost all of the idealisms of his campaign. And even with health care, the thing that Republicans love to go nuts over, he gave it to the insurance companies. What he did was create a new way to allow private enterprises to find new ways to profit from America's health concerns. This is the farthest thing from socialized medicine.
Clay, as always, great stuff. I'm going to let you go because if we come back, we're going to have a very short period of time to
chat.
We're talking about international cabals running the world. We've reached a new point in our Monday
and
relationships.
Metal arts are coming.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Clay Jenkinson.